Today is the one-year anniversary since the passing of Jay Briscoe. 38 years old. It was 1 year ago today. I was streaming right here on this channel when the news came in and broke live. One of the saddest stories. Unfortunately, not the only major loss, but one of the saddest stories to come out of wrestling in 2023. And tonight on Dynamite, Mark Briscoe walked out on stage and he introduced Jay Briscoe's kids, his son and his two daughters, including the older daughter, who they said might never walk again. She walked out there on stage tonight during Dynamite. One of the most emotional moments that you will ever see on a wrestling television show. It's an amazing moment, bittersweet and sad, but also something that was great to see because honestly, we hadn't heard much of anything about the daughters since last year. We know that they were, you know, very badly injured and they were in the hospital. They got released from the hospital and there really haven't been very many updates on them since then. So to see them on the show tonight with smiles on their faces, being able to walk out there side by side with their uncle, it was just one of those moments that was very, very cool. As sad as the story is, you know, 1 year later, still a very, very awesome moment. What else was awesome tonight was the main event, which was Samoa Joe defending the AEW World Heavyweight Championship against the 28-1 Hook. Now, a lot was made about this match last week, all the social media garbage, Tony Khan and Jinder Mahal and all that stuff. And Hook and Jinder kind of got sucked into the whole thing, and it became this tribal war between warring fan factions about who's better than who deserves a title match. Tonight, all that shit washed away. You know, we had the title match on Monday. We had a title match tonight. It had a big fight feel when these two guys came down to the ring. Tony Khan announced that it was commercial free. So we got no commercial breaks during the main event. It was 10 minutes for these two to go out there and do their thing. And I loved this main event. This was an excellent, excellent main event. It achieved exactly what it had to do. Samoa Joe went out there tonight. He looked like a killer. And when it was over, he retained his AEW World Heavyweight title, which of course he was going to. It's his first title defense. He's not losing to Hook. So he won and retained his championship. But Hook, in the process, came out of the match tonight, even in defeat. Only his second defeat. He came out of this match better off than he was going into it. Joe did everything in his power there towards the end. He even let this kid kick out of a muscle buster at one. And I know a lot of people are going to nitpick that. They're gonna hate that. That didn't even bother me. The crowd exploded. I mean, the people were hanging on to every near fall. And they wanted to see a title change. I mean, they came in. Joe came to the ring tonight. The entire building was chanting Joe. Not that they were booing Hook. But Joe walked in there like this conquering king coming back, you know, to claim his land. Everybody was cheering for him. And by the end here, everybody in that building wanted to see Hook walk out with that title. And I saw some people before comparing it almost to Jeff Hardy and The Undertaker on Raw in the ladder match back in 2002. We didn't get the big endorsement there at the end, but there were a lot of similarities between what happened on Raw that night over 20 years ago and what we saw in this main event tonight. And I just can't say enough good things about that main event. I can't say enough good things about Joe as the AEW champion. He's only had one match so far as the defending champion, but just his presence when he comes out just feels like a world beater. And that's exactly what he was during this match tonight. And then at the very end, when Hangman Page comes out and Swerve Strickland is in the crowd, we get a sense of exactly where they're headed for Revolution as far as a triple threat match with Joe defending against not one but two men. So I love the finish of the show. That was not the only title match. We actually had three title matches on the show tonight, including another very good match and a title change. Unfortunately, the title that changed hands is the one that was the most meaningless out of all of them, the one that is most unnecessary out of all of them. But we did get a title change tonight. Top Flight and Private Party, they had a tag team match. I believe that might have been their first tag team match together, at least in an AEW ring, I believe. With Mark Quinn back after over a year on the shelf, it was nice to see him back. But also, we got a very interesting tease. It was in a very quick video package towards the end of the show. But we did have a tease of where they are seemingly going for Sting's retirement match at Revolution. And yes, it might involve the Young Bucks, but it also involves the idea that I pitched last week. The idea that I've been pitching for more than a week. But I saw that segment, and that put a smile on my face. I enjoyed Dynamite tonight. I thought it was a good show. I was entertained. I liked more than I didn't like, which is always the goal when I watch these shows. I want to be able to like more than I hate. I didn't hate anything. And we'll talk about all of it. This is your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. I am the Solid Monster. Like and subscribe. 400 likes is the minimum. That is our goal for tonight, to do our Be the Booker segment. I also just want to mention this real quick, because I know some of the people, at least, if not a number of you, that are in the live chat are also part of the Sound Off Facebook group. We have a private group on Facebook, Solid Monster Sounds Off. You have to apply for membership. Every year, probably for the past 10 or 11 years, we have done a Royal Rumble pool. Just for fun. In the Facebook group, we always have a huge turnout for it. Costs nothing to apply if you want to be a part of the Royal Rumble pool. Didn't look like we were going to be doing one this year. Zach, the one who usually organizes it, he's a little preoccupied right now. He's doing okay. He'll be back soon. But Julian Cannon, shout out to Julian. Julian in the group has stepped up. Julian is the one who is going to organize the entire thing. I already have a post up and pinned in the Facebook group. If you want to get in on the Royal Rumble pool, you pretty much have until the end of next week. All you got to do is go to the post and like the post. That's all you got to do. Costs you nothing. You don't even have to leave a comment if you don't want to. Just like the post. Julian will take care of the rest, and you will be in. So if you're not already in the group, look for it. Apply. I'll try to get you in. I'll try to approve you. And if you want to be part of it, go right ahead. That's all you got to do. It's always fun. I get in on the pool. Everybody gets in on the pool. There's no prizes this year. It's just for bragging rights. But it looked like we weren't going to do one, and now we are. So again, shout out to Julian for his help with that. Tony Schiavone is normally sitting next to Excalibur and Taz at the commentary desk at ringside. That was not the case tonight because Tony was homesick. And in his place was Ian Riccaboni. Always enjoy listening to Ian, so it was good to have him on the call tonight. And they opened the show with the first of three title matches on Dynamite tonight. This one for the TNT Championship with Christian Cage defending against Dustin Rhodes. This is a match that was set up in a backstage segment on Collision. After Dustin picked up a win over Willie Mack, he was confronted by Christian and the Patriarchy. It led to this match here on the show. You know, Dustin, it occurred to me now as we have flipped the calendar, we are now in 2024, that the year before last, at the end of 2022, Dustin publicly said that he was planning on retiring in 2023. And so Dustin Rhodes, his retirement, went the way that most wrestler retirements go. 2023 has come and gone. And here we are, the beginning of 2024. Not only is Dustin Rhodes still wrestling, he is challenging for the TNT Championship. So he had a little change of heart. He's going to go a little bit longer. But look, the man can still go, right? Dustin, he slowed down. He has slowed down a little bit, but he can still crank out a great match when he has to. Tonight was a good example of that. Christian baited him in for a test of strength, which, of course, led to a cheap shot. And Dustin responded with a snap power slam. Christian took a break outside the ring to catch his breath. Dustin went on offense until Christian fought off a superplex, and that sent Dustin to the floor, followed by a dive from the top by Christian onto Dustin on the floor. So Christian was in control through the picture-in-picture break. He dodged a crossbody attempt, but then Dustin avoided a top rope headbutt. Dustin hit a Manhattan drop and hit his signature running bulldog for a two count. He avoided an eye poke, and then he slingshot Christian into the corner, and Dustin wanted the crotch kick that he does, the Shattered Dreams. I know he doesn't call it that anymore, but that's what it is. He wanted the Shattered Dreams. Yambag City, as Taz would call it, but Cage got free. Dustin responded with a drop-down punch and a code red for a two count. He teased the dive as he was about to launch himself through the ropes, though. Christian caught him and cut him off with a right hand. And then he hit a frog splash, Christian did. Only got a two count. So Christian grabbed the TNT title. He was arguing with Aubrey Edwards, who took the title away from him. Dustin got a visible cradle. He had dead to rights. He had Christian dead to rights. Referee's back was turned. Nick Wayne gets into the ring, and he reverses the cradle pin. Dustin kicked out at two anyway. So Dustin wanted another bulldog. Christian dodged it. He went to the second rope. He got his legs swept. And this time Dustin got the, I guess he calls it the unnatural kick. He got the unnatural kick. Dustin then got a superplex. Immediately just, you know, you see Seth Rollins when he's in the ring hit the superplex, immediately gets up into the Falcon Arrow. Again, Dustin, you know, his bones are older than most in this company. So he hits a superplex. He's taken equally as bad of a bump as the person he's suplexing, but he gets right back up. He brings Christian up with him, and he has him in position for a crossroads, and he hits the crossroads, which got a reaction, of course. You knew it would. Got a reaction from the crowd, and he got a very close near fall out of it. Nick Wayne tripped up Dustin from the outside as Christian took the referee. Dustin went out after him. He got goozled by Killswitch. He fought off Killswitch, and then he gave Nick Wayne a Canadian Destroyer on the floor, and he got all of it. I mean, it looked like he spiked this kid right on his head outside the ring. Of course, he didn't because he's a pro, but it looked great, and that was the end of Nick Wayne. Back inside, Christian was in the corner. It looked like he was trying to pull the middle turnbuckle pad off. I don't know what he was doing. He had his back turned. It looked like he was doing something in the corner. Hopefully nothing dirty. But as Dustin came in, he sidestepped Dustin. Dustin ran into the corner. And then Dustin just awkwardly stood there. He had his back turned. So he's in the corner. He's facing the crowd, kind of crouched over a little bit. Again, I didn't know what he was doing. I just thought, okay, he's taking a few seconds. He stood there a little bit longer for like an awkward period of time. And I guess maybe he got the wind knocked out of him legitimately, or he was just selling for a long time. But eventually he turned around and he walked right into a spear. Christian then hit the kill switch, not to be confused with the kill switch outside the ring. He hit the kill switch. He had the match won, but Dustin kicked out. He kicked out very late, but he kicked out. Christian yelled at him. He pulled him up. Dustin flipped him off, and so Christian hit one more kill switch and then finished him off to retain the title. If I had one criticism, now that I go back and I remember what they did here at the end of this match, they basically did the same thing in the main event, right? So here you have Dustin kicking out of Christian's finish. Now, he didn't kick out of it at one, but he kicks out of his finish. He flips him off. That's exactly what Hook did in the main event to Samoa Joe. So maybe I would have avoided doing that here and just saved that for the main event. But I thought it was an enjoyable opener. Hot crowd to start things out. I don't know how many more of these Dustin has left. Again, he wanted to hang it up last year. Obviously, he had second thoughts. I don't know if he's going to go the entire year this year. I don't know. I don't know how many of these he has left, but he did tell Sports Illustrated that every time he has a match now, it takes him about a week to recover. Although he did admit he was still feeling the... Now, he may have just been saying that. He was saying he was still feeling the effects of the Swerve Strickland match. He was kind of in and out of character in the interview. But he says it takes about a week for him to, his body to really recover when he has a match. But he had a really good one here tonight. You got two veterans in there, right, showing what they can do. Hats off to them. No Adam Copeland. Copeland has been doing this open challenge gimmick on Collision. He's wrestling these random matches. And it feels very random, but again, it's part of the story because Christian basically sent him to the back of the line. And so now the story is that Copeland, he's got to just start racking up wins so he can work his way back up into title contention, which of course is a goofy idea to begin with because you had we've had people on this show. I mean, we had Daniel Garcia not that long ago, right? Issue a challenge to MJF to an AEW World Title match. I was going to say Hook, but Hook has a 28-1 record. So you could at least say that Hook has built up his record enough to where if he wants to call out the champion, it makes sense. But I guess Copeland has to work his way back up into title contention. But he was not on the show tonight. So we go to the back. And they gave Renee a workout tonight because she was interviewing people left and right up and down this show. Renee was there to interview Swerve Strickland, and she asked if he would have his eyes on tonight's main event with Samoa Joe and Hook. And he said he would be foolish not to be paying attention. He says whoever wins, it doesn't matter because he's laser-focused on winning the AEW World Heavyweight title. He said coming out of the Continental Classic, he's the one that everybody has been talking about. Everybody's been talking about Swerve. Said he's going to go after that title. Renee said Hangman Page is another man going after the AEW World title. And Swerve said that he's got his eyes on everything. He's got his eyes on everything. He's got his eyes on everyone. And he put over Hangman. He put over Hangman. He said all the men he's beaten, he mentioned Kenny Omega and Bryan Danielson. He said even Jon Moxley in a Texas death match. More recently, he's beaten Roderick Strong and J.D. Drake and Claudio Castagnoli. He said if God opened up the clouds above us and he descended from the heavens and challenged everybody to face him, he said Hangman might have a chance. He said all of these things are true. He's beaten them all except him. He's beaten all these people, but he has not beaten Hangman. Or he's not beaten Swerve. Swerve has beaten Hangman twice. And he says, whose house? Swerve's house. When they came back, they aired highlights of the street fight for the AEW World Tag Team titles that aired on, well, it was technically after a collision. They had their Battle of the Belts special on Saturday night. And they had Sammy Guevara for the finish. He jumped 25 feet in the air off a lighting truss next to the stage. He crashed through the stage. Powerhouse Hobbs pulled Ricky Starks out of harm's way because Sammy and Jericho have issues with the Callis family. And so Takeshita got involved and he hit Jericho with a kendo stick. Jericho and Sammy did not win the tag team titles. And I have to just say here what I said on the podcast this weekend. I watched that street fight on Saturday. And it was an actual street fight. Very rarely do we get street fights in wrestling these days that will start out in the streets. Yeah, maybe they'll start in the ring and they'll brawl into the crowd. If we're lucky, they'll go backstage. They started in the streets outside the arena. They were out there for a while. They did the old Howard Finkel spot where Howard Finkel, his poor rental car, out in Manhattan, parked right outside the Manhattan Center back on Raw in 93. Shawn Michaels and Mr. Perfect, they ended up on the car, broke the windshield. Nobody told Howard they were going to do that. We even had a Howard Finkel reference on commentary when they did that spot. But they brawled out there for a while, then they brawled backstage. Eventually, they made their way into the arena. I thought it was great. As street fights go, that's exactly what I would hope to see if you're going to have a street fight. So I actually really enjoyed that match on Saturday. Now, back live, Renee was in the back with Chris Jericho, who put the blame on the Don Callis family for their loss and for Sammy being out hurt. That's why he was not on the show tonight. He blamed Takeshita for hitting him with a kendo stick to cause him to get powerbombed through a table. He said, so what do I get to use on you for revenge? Maybe a barbed wire baseball bat, maybe a pane of glass, maybe a pizza cutter. Said he's going to seek and destroy his ass. So, if I was to ask you, who do you think showed up to interrupt Jericho? And we did this multiple choice. Remember when you were back in school, and maybe I'm dating myself here, but when I was back in school, and we would take these, like, official tests. They had the Scantron. Remember the Scantron sheets? You had to fill in the little bubble with your number two pencil. If I was to give you a multiple choice quiz, who interrupted Chris Jericho backstage? And I said, choice A, Don Callis. Choice B, Konosuke Takeshita. Choice C, Kylie Rae. Or choice D, Matt Sydal. Who would you guess interrupted Chris Jericho here in this segment? If you chose option D, Matt Sydal, which none of you would have done, then you would be correct. What a fucking random interruption here in this segment. So Matt Sydal shows up. And he says, boy, Jericho, you know, you're losing it. He goes, this isn't you. I know you. He says, you're better than that. He says, and to get over this loss, you've got to get back in the ring, and you've got to get back in the ring and fight somebody who has beaten you before, like me. He said, Nick Hausman? I should have had Nick Hausman as an option. But would Hausman have the guts to show up and interrupt Jericho? That's the question. I don't know if he would actually have the guts to do it. But no, he was not an option on the exam. Stop adding options to the exam. I'm the teacher, not you. So Jericho says, look, I respect you as a wrestler. He says, some would even say that you were born to do this. Uh-huh. He said, maybe you're right. Maybe we do need to do this match. Maybe we need to do it right here in North Charleston, South Carolina, Friday night on Rampage. And he told him, be careful what you wish for. So, I mean, are we supposed to... Now, on the television show, they don't really acknowledge the fact that Rampage is a taped show. So it was a little weird because he said, how about we do the match right here in North Charleston, South Carolina? We'll do it on Rampage on Friday night. So I guess, are we, like, in kayfabe, are we supposed to believe that they're going to run the same city and the same venue on Friday, or are they just basically admitting the show is taped? I don't know. This felt like a very forced way to get Jericho in a match on the taped show. That's what this was. Last week when Jericho came out, they played the music throughout the entire segment as he fought, right, with Big Bill. We all know why they did that, right? They did that very clearly. They did that to mask any negative reaction from the Daily's Place crowd to Chris Jericho. So they played the music. And then on Rampage, or on Collision, they started the match outside. And they spent the majority of the match outside the building, in the back of the building, before they got into the building. And I'm sure that played into their calculations as well. They are going to great lengths to do whatever they can to protect Jericho when he comes out, with the hope, and I actually think they're right, I think what's going to end up happening is, as time goes on, this is all going to wash away, and Jericho's going to come out, and the boos are going to go away. That's what's going to end up happening. But for the time being, they want to avoid the chants, they want to avoid the boos, they want to avoid any kind of negativity, and so Jericho is going to wrestle on Rampage. When's the last time we saw Jericho wrestle on Rampage? Isn't he normally doing commentary on Rampage? So now we're getting a Chris Jericho match on the taped show, so that should there be any negative reaction, and I didn't hear any, because they had the live crowd reaction when he was in the back, I don't know if they turned the volume down, which is possible. Right, I wasn't in the building, so I can't say for sure if they boot him or not. But they're going to do the match on Friday night so that they can edit out any negative reaction. That's why Jericho is wrestling Matt Sydal, of all people. Like, where the fuck did this match come from? That's why Jericho is going to be on Rampage Friday night. You're not getting one over on me. I know what you're doing. You can be sneaky about it, but I know exactly what you're doing. Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta in a tag team match against Penta and Commander, and they had Rey Fénix out there with them. Rey Fénix is still recovering from injuries. He'll be back soon. Commander escaped the Tree of Woe and sent Beretta to the floor. He launched Cassidy into the corner. Penta made the hot tag. He ran wild with some sling blades. He got a stalling made in Japan on Cassidy, and Commander wiped out Trent with a dive. Beretta saved his partner from an assisted fear factor, and Cassidy laid out Penta with the round-the-world DDT. Penta blindsided Beretta with a pump kick and a step-up Canadian Destroyer. Commander hit a rope walk splash for two, which Cassidy was the one who broke up the fall. So Commander wanted a Fénix splash. Beretta avoided it and hit a running knee to turn Commander inside out. Penta tried a springboard. Cassidy shoved his partner aside and hit beach break. An orange punch sent Commander into Beretta, who hit the crunchy to pick up the win for Best Friends. After the match, Roderick Strong and the Kingdom came to the ring. Strong told Cassidy to take off his glasses. He questioned, which he never did, by the way. And he questioned if being the international champion maybe has become a little too much for him since he's now doing tag team matches. And Strong said that title belongs to him, said that he is coming for the title. Cassidy said, all right, fine. We'll do the match right here, right now. And of course, everybody popped because they wanted to see another title match on the show. And the logical thing to do here, as the heel, if you're Roderick Strong and Orange Cassidy is offering himself, he's offering you a title opportunity after he just got done wrestling a match, you would think that Roderick Strong would take him up on that offer, but oh no. Roderick Strong said, we're not going to do the match tonight. We're going to do the match on March 3rd at Revolution. And I'm going to let you spend the next 6 weeks knowing that that title is coming to me. Okay. I don't know what kind of warped logic that is. Obviously, they wanted to save the match for the pay-per-view, and that's the way that they went about doing it, but I just think it made Roddy look like an idiot. No surprise, though, that he would be next in line for a shot at the title. They only had Adam Cole come out on television twice and tell us flat out that Roderick Strong was going after the international title. So, of course, we knew this match was coming. If the Undisputed Kingdom is being positioned as the top heel faction in this company, and you could argue that the Callis family is still the top faction, right? Because really, what has the Undisputed Kingdom done so far, right? Nothing yet, nothing of note. But if they're going to be the top heel faction in this company, then they have to deliver on their promises. They have to bring gold into the fold. Now, they have the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles. Who gives a shit? Okay, who cares? And frankly, they already had the titles anyway before the faction was even formed. I'm talking about from when Adam Cole revealed himself to be the devil. He sat in the ring and he told us, right? We have Roddy is going to go after this title, and Wardlow is going to go after that title. And when I'm recovered, he's going to hand me the AEW World title. That's probably not going to happen. But you need Roderick Strong to at least deliver on that promise and bring the international title into the fold. Otherwise, this faction has gone limp already. I'm not even sure why Orange Cassidy needs to have the title anymore at this point. So Roderick Strong should go to Revolution and absolutely win the international title, not because Roderick Strong needs it, but because the Undisputed Kingdom needs it. If they can't beat Orange Cassidy, then why the fuck are we supposed to believe that they're going to beat Samoa Joe or Swerve or whoever it is and bring in the AEW World title? They need the international title. Renee was backstage with Hangman Adam Page, who said that, you know, holding championship gold has not always been your main focus, but that's exactly what you've honed in on. So why the change? And he said that he treated that AEW World title with reverence. He said he needed it. He needed the AEW World title. But what he's realized about himself is that he wanted to win the championship back then. But here in 2024, not only does he want to win, he will hold it, he will put his name on it, and he will keep it there as long as he can. Renee brought up Swerve's comments earlier that he can't beat him. He said, you can't beat him. You've already lost twice. Hangman said, I don't think about Swerve at all. But even if I can't beat that guy, it doesn't matter because Swerve is not the AEW World Champion. Samoa Joe is. So that is my focus. And he said, maybe after tonight, it'll be Hook. He said, God be with you if it is. Now back in the ring, we had the segment of the night. Justin Roberts stood in the ring, and he introduced Mark Briscoe and the Briscoe family. And Mark Briscoe walked out on stage. No family with him when he initially walked out. They did cut to a shot at ringside, and in the front row, you saw members of the Briscoe family. You saw Papa Briscoe was there and his mom. I think his kids were there. I don't know if all of his kids were. I think Mark's got like 8 kids. I don't know if they were all there or not, but they cut back to Mark on the stage, and Mark said that he comes to us tonight representing the baddest tag team in history, the Briscoe brothers. That got them boys chants from the crowd. He said, tragically, 1 year ago tonight, my partner, my brother, he passed on. Car accident. Moved on to the next level of existence. They say generations come, generations go. He goes, man, my nieces were in that truck with him. And you could hear a pin drop at this point in this crowd. I mean, they were paying attention to what this man had to say. And he said, tragically, they told his oldest niece that she would never walk again. However, and at that point, Jay's son and his two daughters, Gracie and Jaylee, walked out. I think they had Dem Boys shirts on also. Again, these are two girls who were in the truck with him when he died. It was a terrible wreck. And I know his oldest daughter did cheer. He would go to her cheer practices and stuff. She was very active. And those pictures the family posted on Facebook of them in the hospital and braces on their legs, it was horrible. You know. And again, the report was that the doctors didn't know if she would ever walk again. Right? That's a shoot. That's what they said at the time. They did not know. But it wasn't looking good. Not only did they walk out there, Mark got emotional. They weren't emotional. They had smiles on their faces. Like they were genuinely happy to be there with their uncle and just genuinely happy to be able to walk out there, period. And so they walked out on stage. Mark teared up. He said, God is on the throne. We Dem Boys, damn it. We won't stop. We can't stop. We ain't going nowhere. And then he thanked everybody and they all hugged. And then they cut to a tribute package for Jay Briscoe that I believe might have been the same one they aired on television last year. I was not expecting to be so emotional during a segment here on Dynamite, but I knew it was the anniversary and I was going to open and mention it, but I didn't know that they were going to do something on the show. Now, Tony Khan did acknowledge it on Twitter earlier today, but I didn't know they were going to do this segment on the show. And I'm really happy that they did. It was very cool to see the daughters out there and all of them on stage embracing and, you know, getting that kind of reception from the crowd. And you look for something positive out of such a shitty experience. I mean, there's nothing happy about what happened a year ago. It was a terrible accident. It was a terrible tragedy. It caught everybody by surprise. And they have a huge family. You know, when you have kids involved, that makes it even worse because you have young kids involved now who one day their father is here, the next day he's not. And you ask why, and there's no good reason why. 38 years old, he should still be here. And like I said, Mark has a ton of kids. It's a huge family they have. And Mark's really struggled. He's talked about that, you know, his entire career. It's been him and his brother. They've traveled the roads together. He still gets very emotional when he has to get ready to leave and go to the airport. You know, he talks about that. You know, it's been a year, but a year is not really that long. You know, I'm not sure you really ever get over something like that. So out of that horrendous experience, it was nice to see something positive here on this show. So this was the segment of the night. Nothing could touch this. This was just great to see. And we went back to Renee. We went back to Renee for the third time tonight. I said they kept this woman very busy here on this show. So we go back to Renee, and she's sitting down with the Young Bucks. This was 1 week after the Bucks walked out at the end of Dynamite last week. You remember Sting, Darby against Takeshita and Powerhouse Hobbs. They had that tornado tag team match. Sting got the win for his team. Tony Schiavone got in the ring, and he asked Sting, who do you got in mind? Or do you have anybody in mind as your final opponent for Revolution? Because they hadn't really addressed it up until this point. That's when the Young Bucks walked out on stage. They have a bit of a new look. They shave their faces and they have these weird fucking Vince-like mustaches now, which is easy heel heat. Although these days, just walking out, period, is probably good heel heat for the Young Bucks. But they never addressed the crowd, right? Nothing was said. They left it to lead you to believe that the Bucks are going to be Sting's final opponent to Revolution. So here with Renee, she said, you guys requested this time. And before she could even say anything else, Nick Jackson cut her off and asked her to call them by their God-given names, Nicholas and Matthew Jackson. You see, he said, we're executive vice presidents around here, and it's time to take these jobs a little more serious. If only they had had that attitude a year and a half ago. Or if only they had had that attitude a year ago. If they took those jobs as EVPs a little more seriously, maybe we could have gotten everybody in the room together. But that's for another day. Renee brought up the temper tantrums and the public meltdowns. You know, they lost at Full Gear. The rumors, right? She mentioned the rumors without actually mentioning what the rumors were. So Matt cut her off and said, some of these rumors, all fake. But let's say hypothetically speaking, let's say that some of the rumors are actually true. What would you do to preserve and protect your life's work, your baby, right? You and John have a beautiful daughter, don't you? What would you do? And what would you be willing to lose? Relationships with your friends and coworkers? How about your reputation or your legacy? Out the window. Would you be willing to do that in hindsight if you knew that there would be a sustaining, thriving wrestling company called AEW? Says, hell yeah, and I would do it all over again. By the way, you got your paycheck this week? Good, right? He was making a point. Says, you're welcome. So Renee brought up Sting. And Matt said, when we started AEW, we said that we were going to change the world, and that's exactly what we did. It was out with the old, in with the new. And somewhere along the way, we did lose our way. He said it was like the culture shifted and the toxicity crept into the locker rooms. And the perception of the company was just different. Different. The perception of the company was different. Now, this was a very interesting, if you pay attention to the words that he was using, this is very, very interesting. It's going to get a lot of people talking here. But he talked about the perception of the company change. And he said he thinks he knows why. It's because they started to lean on yesterday's self-serving, superficial, cancerous superstars. And he says, you mentioned Sting. He said, Sting is none of those things. Sting is none of those things. He's great. He's a role model employee. Sting is awesome. And he's actually envious of Sting. He's envious about the way that people talk about this man. Says maybe people will talk about us that way one day. But it's about what Sting represents. The image of Sting is not in line with what they wanted to do here in AEW. So unfortunately for Sting, we are going to have to say goodbye to Sting. And everybody likes Sting. And we, the royal we, would never ask anybody to do something that we weren't willing to do ourselves. So Renee asked them, is that an official call out? Are you officially calling out Sting for his retirement match or Revolution? Nick then pulled out his phone. He showed Matt something on his phone. He said, as EVPs, we'll pull some strings. And then they got up to go leave, and Matt told her, we've got a meeting to go get to. Now, people are going to be very upset about this promo. People are going to be upset, and that's the point. That's the whole fucking point of the promo, is to upset people. Because a lot of people don't like the Young Bucks. And a lot of people don't like the idea of the Young Bucks being Sting's final opponents. So they're leaning into it. They're leaning into it, even though if you pay attention to what he said here, right? What he said here, what Matt Jackson said here, really should make them baby faces to their fans. But because there is this hatred of the Young Bucks, and because they were so smug about it here in this segment, it's supposed to get them heat. And I think this heel turn, I said this a few weeks ago, this heel turn is exactly what the Young Bucks need, because the Young Bucks are ice cold right now. The Young Bucks have no direction. Hangman Page is off doing something else. Kenny Omega is still laid up, healing up from diverticulitis. And when he comes back, he's going to jump right back into the Callis family stuff. Not going to have anything to do with the Young Bucks. So then what are the Bucks going to do? You got to come up with an idea for the Young Bucks. As baby faces, there just isn't anything for them to really do. And there's already this hatred for them, so why not tap into that and use that? Why not use that to your advantage? And that's what they're starting to do here. This heel turn is exactly what they needed to do. I think actually leaning in on the EVP stuff is a smart thing to do. It's not like the AW audience doesn't know that they're EVPs in the company. And it's not like it hasn't been brought up on television before anyway, right? People know. The AEW audience, they know. They know that they're EVPs. So why not lean into it, right? Everybody knows. Everybody's aware of the different controversies that have taken place over the past year and a half. And if there's one thing that people don't like, it is executive. And this is a good life lesson, too, not just in wrestling. But if there's one thing that people don't like, it is executives that abuse their power, or the perception that you are an executive and you are in some way, shape, or form abusing your power. And no matter what certain fans believe, and you already have fans online, you have people, you have from a certain cult who believe in their heart, there's no way that Sting chose the Young Bucks as his final opponents. This is clearly a situation where the Young Bucks have politic their way into this match at Revolution against Sting's will, or they planted the idea in the man's head, even though every other report that has come out so far contradicts that and says that Sting wanted the Young Bucks as his opponents, that the Young Bucks were not even supposed to be back on TV yet, that the Young Bucks were called back early because they accepted the offer when Sting came to them and said, hey, would you be my final match in AEW? But if you're the Young Bucks, then why the hell would you say no to that? Of course, you're going to say, of course, it would be an honor. It would be an honor to share the ring with you in your final match at Revolution. But you have people who don't believe that. No, it can't be true. It can't be true. Or people say, turning on Sting and saying, well then, Sting, there's a reason why Sting's not a booker. Tony Khan should have stepped in then and overruled Sting, and he should have given Sting a different opponent. But you know that if it came out that Tony Khan was going against the wishes of Sting and wanted to do something himself, oh, well, Tony Khan, how could he do such a thing? He's disrespecting a legend here. Let Sting do what he wants in his final match. But because it's the Young Bucks, oh, well, if this is true, I mean, Sting's an idiot. Like, he should be overruled. You got to put somebody else in there. I love it. I just love seeing the comments and seeing the meltdowns on social media that I have seen over the past week. It's been very amusing to me. Very, very entertaining, I have to say. What I would like to see, the Young Bucks wrestle like heels. And I don't mean wrestle like heels all the other times they were heels. I mean cut out the excessive super kicks, cut out all the dives and all the flashy stuff, the majority of the flashy stuff. You could leave some of it in there. But really wrestle like heels. Like, we need a new and improved Young Bucks, right? Coke. They just came out with, like, Coke Zero or some other new Coke, which I'm sure will go over, like, every other fucking version of Coke they've come out with over the years. Why not put a fresh coat of paint on the Young Bucks and actually have them work their matches differently than they normally do? So beyond the character aspect, like a typical Young Bucks match, why not work a different style? Work a style that will get them more heat by teasing certain things and then not delivering on it. I would enjoy that. I would enjoy it if they changed up their style a little bit here during this run. That's just me. That's just something, a personal thing I'd love to see. I think that'd be a good, but the character change here is a good first step in that direction. Now, later in the show, I'm skipping ahead here because there's another segment that aired that ties into this. So I'm skipping ahead to the Darby Allin and Sting video package that aired before the main event. We got a video package that was showing highlights of many of the matches that Sting and Darby have had over their time together here, 20-plus matches in AEW. And Darby was narrating over the video, and there was a key line. Not talking key lime, okay? We're not talking pie. The key line in the video was that Darby said, and I want to make sure I'm quoting him here, the story will end with him. Oh, here we go again with stories, by the way. Sting and Darby are going to finish their story before Cody. At this rate, I think everybody is going to finish their story before Cody. Sting and Darby are going to finish their story by becoming the AEW Tag Team Champions. And they cut back to Excalibur on commentary when the video is over, and Excalibur questioned who Sting's final opponent is going to be at Revolution. So they're planting doubt that maybe it won't be the Young Bucks, because in the video they showed Ricky Starks and Big Bill, who are the reigning AEW World Tag Team Champions. So maybe it won't be the Young Bucks, but we know it will be. And so you start thinking, well, they wouldn't put that line in there unless that was the direction they were going in. And so, well, how about that? Who's the one who's been crowing now for weeks about the right story for Sting going into his final match? And it's not a singles match with Darby, and it's not anything but Sting going for the AEW tag team titles in his final match and winning them. Retiring undefeated, he and Darby, he and Darby have never challenged for the tag team titles before, which is surprising to me. But here we are now, heading into their final match, and finally, they are staking their claim, we are going after the AEW World Tag Team titles. And they're going to give the people of Greensboro a great moment there with Sting winning and retiring as tag team champion. They could vacate the titles and Tony Khan can do what he loves to do and have a tournament after Revolution. That's fine. But the Young Bucks have to win the tag team titles before Revolution, unless they do a three-way and it's Sting and Darby, the Young Bucks, Ricky Starks, and Big Bill. I don't like that. It's not clean enough. We need a clean match. One-on-one, two-on-two. That's it. None of this triple threat, fatal four-way, eight-man tag bullshit. I don't want to see it. If the Young Bucks are Sting's choice for Revolution, then the Young Bucks should win the AEW tag team titles from Ricky Starks and Big Bill. They have 6 weeks to go until Revolution. You get those belts on the Bucks go to Revolution, they defend the belts against Sting and Darby win, they go out as tag team champions. And then you can do whatever the hell you want to do coming out of Revolution. But that's why that line was put in there. It's the right story. That's why I pitched it. Because it makes sense. It's the feel-good story. Not everybody who retires has to go out on their back, putting somebody else over. Sting is not going to have a singles match. I might feel differently if it was a one-on-one match. I certainly wouldn't want Sting winning the world title, and then you retire, you know, he retires and you vacate the world title. But you know that Sting is doing a tag match. He does not feel that he can do a singles match. If he did, he would have done one. Tony Khan would have given this man whatever he wants. If Sting wanted to stick out one more year in AEW and he wanted a pay raise, Tony Khan would have backed up the Brinks truck. He would have given this man anything he wanted. Sometimes you go with the best story. You give the people what they want, and the people in Greensboro are going to want to see Sting go out a winner. They're going to want to see him go out a champion. It's the right move to make. Now we wait and see if they get the belts on the Bucks beforehand or if they go about this some other way. Because it's not going to be Sting and Darby against Ricky and Bill. The Bucks are going to be in there in some way. But I would much prefer they do a straight tag match and none of this triple threat nonsense. We had Bullet Club Gold. They've got new music. Against Brian Cage and the Gates of Agony for the Ring of Honor six-man tag team titles. If you're wondering what the hell happened to Juice Robinson, Juice has a bad back. He had back surgery. And he may be out for a while. At the time, it was said that it wasn't overly serious that would keep him out for 6 months or a year. I believe he only had the surgery maybe a month and a half ago. I don't know how much longer he'll be out for, but it's back surgery. So look, when you have back surgery, you're going to be out for a while. So that's where he is. I'll tell you what I don't understand. I don't understand why we still have Ring of Honor titles being defended on AEW television. I thought that we were getting away from this. And here we are. We have the Ring of Honor World Six-Man titles being defended here on Dynamite. And so here's my question to Tony Khan. if you are going to defend Ring of Honor titles freely on AEW television, if you're going to do that, here's my question. Why do we never see the Ring of Honor Women's World title defended on any of these shows? Why is Athena the one person who literally is exclusive? I mean, I guess she was in the Owen Hart tournament last year, but it feels like she is the only one, the only champion, the only real star on that roster who truly is exclusive to Ring of Honor. Why is that? Why do we watch this and see the Ring of Honor six-man tag team titles on television, but we can't see Athena defend her title? What's the difference? I'll tell you what the difference is. The difference is that I guess it would exceed the quota or whatever benchmark Tony Khan has set for the maximum number of allowable women's matches on this show week to week. He can't go beyond that number, evidently. I don't know. I can't come up with any other good reason for it. Brian Cage, by the way, he was in this match. He was wrestling with a torn lat muscle, which sounds like a very bad idea. If you're somebody, especially somebody who does power moves, to be wrestling with a torn anything. But he mentioned that on his social media, that he tore his lat in a match a few weeks ago, and he's still out there wrestling. Austin Gunn, he was isolated through the commercial break in the middle of the match. I mean, they certainly worked the match like babyfaces. I mean, clearly they were the babyfaces here in this match. And look, I mean, if they're going to go through with this whole bang-bang scissor gang union with the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, then I guess they would have to be babyfaces. When things came back, Austin made the hot tag to Colton, who ran wild and actually got a nice reaction. Colton showed off his athleticism, some corner splashes. He hit his father's old one and only finish, only got two. Colton wanted a famouser. He turned his back, though, and was met with a pounce from Toa Leona. We got a swinging assisted powerbomb that led to a Bishop Cone air raid crash for a near fall. Cage tried to whip Leona into Jay White and Austin Gunn, who both dodged it, and Leona flew over the barricade into the timekeeper's area. Cage got dropped with the 310 to Yuma by the Guns, leaving Cone and White alone. Prince Nana then tripped up Jay White, which allowed Cone to hit a fireman's carry gut buster for two. Cone took the referee, and Nana wanted a belt shot. But here comes Anthony Bowens, and Bowens sprints down to the ring, and he took the title away from him. Jay White then laid out Cone with a Blade Runner, and he pinned him to win the match and the Ring of Honor World six-man titles for Bullet Club Gold. After the match, the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, they stood on stage with their AEW Trios titles, because we got two of them. We have two sets of Trios titles now on this show. And Bullet Club Gold had their belts in the ring. They realized that it was Anthony Bowens' assist that helped get them the win. So now we have two sets of Trios champions on this show, which is completely unnecessary, but obviously this is going to play into the story they're telling with Bullet Club Gold and the Acclaimed. And they're going to tease it out for a while, and eventually we're probably going to get the union between them. Or Bullet Club Gold will just sucker them in and say, hey, fuckers, you know, you fell for it, and then they'll go back to being heels, which honestly is what I would prefer. I kind of hope that it is all just a swerve and we're not going to get Jay White roped into this nonsense, but if they're going to do this, if they're going to do what I think they're going to do, which is build to a match of revolution between the two sides, just unify the belts at that point. Do we really need two sets of Trios titles? Even Ring of Honor itself, even if they were just on Ring of Honor, do we need Ring of Honor six-man tag team belts? I mean, you could argue, do we even need AEW Trios belts at this point? If you were going to keep one over the other, those would be the ones that you would keep. We don't need two sets of belts. We really don't. And I feel like we see these belts at least as much, if not more so, on AEW than we even see them on Ring of Honor. So just unify them. Just unify them into one. Adam Cole was backstage with Wardlow, who Cole said has not even scratched the surface of what he is capable of. Being in the Undisputed Kingdom makes Wardlow unbeatable. He said that Wardlow is going to go down as the most dominant AEW wrestler of all time. Wardlow will mow down everybody until there's no one left, and the AEW world title is the property of the Undisputed Kingdom. And Wardlow, in response to all this, used Adam Cole's line and simply said, boom, to close out the promo. Vince McMahon's vision has finally been realized. It hit me like a ton of bricks as I'm watching this segment. I'm watching Adam Cole stand there in the back next to the big man, cutting a promo for him like a manager. And it just hit me like a bolt of lightning that Vince McMahon's vision has been realized. Adam Cole is a manager for the big guy. It took a while, but he finally got there. This is where we are. Adam Cole is officially a manager. See, he was right all along. I guess he knew all along. Timeless Tony Storm. I love Timeless Tony Storm. One of my favorite parts of the show. She was out to do commentary with Luther and Mariah May standing behind her. Out to do commentary for Deonna Purrazzo one-on-one with Anna Jay. Purrazzo was honing in on Anna's taped up right shoulder. After dodging a corner charge, Jay hit a neck breaker through the ropes on the apron before they went to the picture-in-picture break. Purrazzo mounted her comeback with a knee lift leg sweep combo and then followed with a pump kick for two. Jay answered with a backstabber, and then Purrazzo sank in a Fujiwara armbar, but Anna Jay was able to make it to the ropes. Both ladies got up. They traded forearms. Purrazzo sidestepped a home run shot and then sank in the Venus de Milo for the verbal submission. So another win here, her second win for Deonna Purrazzo. She got her first win on Collision over Red Velvet, and now here over Anna Jay. Tony Storm, though, during this match, they would cut back to her. And Tony Storm, she was wild on commentary. She was feeding macaroons, which are very good, by the way. Coconut macaroons, fucking awesome. I'd love for her to feed macaroons to me. How do I get that job? Ian Riccaboni, hey, he had the job of the night tonight. He sat there on commentary. He was being fed, hand-fed macaroons by Tony Storm, who thought that Ian was Tony Schiavone, and she was complimenting him on his new haircut and shaving his beard, called him Schiavone. She thought he was Tony Schiavone, but looked better. And then at one point during the match, she also said to Ian, I don't know what you're doing with your feet under this table, but please do it harder. Everyone, I don't care what you do in life. Whatever it is that you do for a living, when you wake up in the morning and you go to work, everyone should aspire to have as much fun at their job as Toni Storm is having at hers. Because she is clearly enjoying herself and clearly relishing in this gimmick, and I'm loving it. It's one of my favorite things on AEW television. So after the match, Renee got in the ring and asked Deonna Purrazzo if she had anything to say to Toni Storm. And Deonna said that she doesn't know what's gotten into Tony. They used to be like sisters. And it's clear, since she arrived in AEW, that Tony has changed. But so has she. She said, you might have been friends with Deonna Purrazzo, but you have never met the greatest technical women's wrestler in the world, Mayu Iwatani. No. She said, the greatest technical women's wrestler in the world, the Virtuoso. And so Toni Storm on the outside of the ring, she took the mic and she said, technical, you want technical? And at that point, Luther picked her up on his shoulders. And she called Deonna an artificially tanned hag. My past is none of your concern. I ought to march into that ring and sock you right in that box. But we must go to commercial, darling. So chin up, tits out, and watch for the shoe. And she threw her shoe at her in the ring. Deonna then threw the shoe back at her. I think it landed in the front row somewhere. Might have hit somebody in the head. And Luther carried, and she was still talking in the mic, and she carried Tony to the back on his shoulders. I mean, what more can be said? What more can be said? She's out there feeding macaroons to Ian Riccaboni. She's talking about hitting people in their box. You know, this woman, what can't this woman do? There's no limits to what this woman can do. She doesn't even need the title at this point, honestly. It's almost like the title is being wasted on her. You can put the title on somebody else and just let her go out there and she'll be the star of the division no matter what. But I'm still hoping we get Jamie Hayter back soon. Even though they're doing the slow burn with Mariah May. Maybe Mariah May will be the one to beat her for the belt. But at some point, I would like to get a Jamie Hayter Toni Storm match again. That was a very different Toni Storm at Full Gear 2 years ago, the last time we saw them wrestle. We had Private Party against Top Flight. Speaking of Full Gear from 2 years ago, that would be around the time that Mark Quinn got hurt. So it's been over 13 months since we have seen him. And they finally, you know, I couldn't remember what the injury even was. He was out for so long. And yeah, I would see him. He would visit at the House of Glory shows. And I didn't, you know, I talked to him briefly, but I didn't want to get into like, how's the injury and all that stuff. I left him alone, but it was a torn pec. For some reason, I thought it was maybe a shoulder injury or a bicep or something. It was a torn pec. And so over 13 months on the shelf, it has been that long since we have seen Private Party in the ring together. So it's been a very long time. And, you know, you also hear you had Top Flight and Private Party. Top Flight has had their share of injuries, too. Darius Martin was snake-bitten for a while. Dante with that disgusting injury at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view almost a year ago. So all of these men, except maybe Isaiah, they've all dealt with their share of injury issues. So it was nice to see them all healthy for a change. Mark Quinn hit four dives at one point. Consecutive dives. He went from one side of the ring to the other because each member of Top Flight was outside the ring on opposing sides. And so he hit dives out on both sides. Then back in the ring, he hit a 450 splash, only got a two count. Dante answered with a ripcord jumping knee and a thrust kick. And then Darius got a flatliner for a two count of his own. Isaiah Cassidy entered. He laid out Dante with a corkscrew kick and then the gin and juice. Darius, who was the legal man, he jumped in. He got immediately rolled up by Mark Quinn, who grabbed a hold of the rope. He grabbed a hold of the rope right at the last second for that little bit of added leverage to get the pin and to steal the win for Private Party. After the match, Action Andretti came to the ring. Top Flight was very upset over the finish. Meanwhile, Private Party's out there. They're dancing around. They're celebrating and partying in the crowd with the fans. The announcers at first, they weren't sure if he grabbed the rope on purpose or by accident. I'm like, what the fuck were you watching? Of course it was on purpose. And then they aired a replay and it was pretty clear he did it on purpose. Maybe the smirk is what gave it away. But yes, he grabbed the ropes on purpose. So does this mean a heel turn for Private Party? Not necessarily, but it's possible. I don't know if they're going to do that or not. But one thing I do know, I'd like to see more from these two teams. And the way they did the finish here in this match leaves it open for them to do more matches. These are two of the young teams in this company. Private Party was set back because of the injury to Mark Quinn. And Isaiah Cassidy was doing stuff with the Hardys, Brother Zay. You know, at least he had something to do. So the injury is what set them back. Top Flight, again, besieged by injuries over the last couple of years. If they can stay healthy, these are two teams that Tony Khan should be focusing on in that tag team division. Private Party against Top Flight could be an AEW tag team title match down the road at some point. If those titles, if I'm right, and we go to Revolution and Sting and Darby win the belts and then vacate them and they have a tournament, Top Flight and Private Party, who's to say they don't meet in the finals of that tournament? Or during the tournament at some point. So I'd like to see more from these two. And then it was main event time. Commercial free main event for the AEW World Championship. Samoa Joe defending his new title against the 28-1 Hook. Had a big fight feel here with the big ring introductions before the match started. The crowd was chanting Joe over and over again. And as soon as the bell rung, Hook took it to Joe right away. He didn't waste any time. He went right after the champion. There was no collar and elbow tie-up. There was no handshake. He took it right to Joe. Joe threw him out of the ring. Hook jumped off the barricade at ringside when Joe came out and took him down with a forearm. Back in the ring, Joe annihilated this kid with a running back elbow. I mean, he just wiped him out. Joe fired away with body shots in the corner. He whipped him into the far side, hit another charging elbow, and then a kick to the head. Joe hit a PK and then covered him, but Hook slipped out. Hook got up. He tried for a T-bone, but Joe put a stop to that. He did put Joe down, though, and he hit a sliding clothesline. So they both ended up outside. at which point Hook got up on the apron and he did a running, diving forearm off the apron that took Joe down. He tried for another T-bone. Now, this time, Hook was trying to T-bone him onto or through the announce desk. They were right in front of the announcers, right in front of Taz. Joe stuffed the attempt, and he delivered. Now, it's not even, it wouldn't even do it justice to sit here and tell you that he delivered a uranage. We see a uranage in almost every match. Okay, we see Joe do it. We see Solo Sikoa do it. We see Jay White do it. We see uranages all the time. What we got here was a spinning uranage. And Joe, I mean, he wrecked him. He absolutely wrecked him onto the lid of the announce desk, which you would think, all right, the lid is there to protect him. He hit the edge of that fucking table so hard, the table collapsed. He didn't even land on the table. He got thrown into the table, and the table collapsed. I've seen people land on the table and do far more, and the table does not collapse. I mean, he really did. He had these red welts on his back. Joe was so proud of himself. I mean, he's flailing. He looked like Vince McMahon. He's flailing his arms as he's circling around the ring, and the referee goes over to check on Hook. So Joe marches back over, and when he marches back over, Hook looks up at him, and he flips him the double bird. Right, we saw that with Dustin Rhodes. That's what I was talking about earlier in the opener. So he flips him off. So Joe picks him up at a powerbomb position, and he powerbombs Hook on the ring apron. He gives him an apron powerbomb. And now Hook is down flat on his face on the floor. Referee is checking on him. The doctor comes over to check on him. Taz said, look, I'm going to put my headset down. Because Excalibur said, I'm sure this is tough for you to see. And Taz is like, you know what? I'm going to take my headset off for a second. Obviously expressing concern for his boy. So Joe got back in the ring. Bryce Remsburg now begins his count. And when Bryce got to the count of nine, Hook was back up to his feet. He shoved Doc Samson away, and he dove back into the ring. Joe got off a snap power slam, and he covered him. Hook kicked out. Joe then got him up on his shoulders, and he dropped him with a Death Valley driver. And again, Hook kicked out. Joe got Hook seated on the top rope, and you know what that means. He got him up on his shoulders in position for the muscle buster. And he dropped him, and that was it. That should have been it, right? He hit the muscle buster on this kid. That's his finish. Nighty-night. It's all over. We've seen Joe win titles before with that move. Hits the muscle buster. He covers Hook. Not only was this not it, Hook kicked out at one. Joe let this fucker kick out of the muscle buster at one. Right? That says a lot. I mean, when I say Joe gave him a lot and made him look like $1 million, this right here is the biggest reason why. That's a big deal. Because you might say, people who didn't like the fact that Hook was even getting a title match or thought it was a joke, like, what has he ever done, right? Well, again, at least they've taken care to build up a record for him where you could at least justify the fact that, okay, this kid's 28-1. He's spitting out a challenge. Okay. All right, fine, right? But when you do something like this, this is how you help get somebody over. You don't just do that for anybody. He was doing him a huge solid by letting him kick out of that move. And because of that, because we never see people kick out at one, usually not even at three, from the muscle buster, the crowd erupted. Joe had a look on his face like he couldn't believe it. So Hook gets up, he hits the ropes, he comes off with a clothesline. He comes off again with a second clothesline. He comes off again with a third clothesline. He's building momentum. Now you can hear the crowd. It's building, right? Now they're getting behind this kid. They want to see him win that championship. Taz is on commentary. He cussed, obviously. I don't know what he said, but they censored it. So obviously he said something. Hook got Joe up, and he took him over for a T-bone suplex. The fans at this point, they were losing their minds. Hook tried to lock in Red Rum, but he countered out of it, and Joe locked on the Coquina clutch. And that's never a good thing. He got him trapped in the clutch right in the middle of the ring. Hook tried to fight out of it. He faded. Eventually, he went out. Bryce Remsburg lifted the arm once. He lifted the arm twice. He lifted the arm for a third time, and just like MJF at World's End, the arm went down, and still, your AEW World Heavyweight Champion, Samoa Joe. Joe leaves the ring, and Hook starts to get back up, and he's screaming at Joe, "That's all you got? That's all you got?" Joe gets back in the ring. He kicks this kid right in the crotch, puts him back on the top rope, gets him back on his shoulders, and he delivers a second muscle buster. Hook is getting up again. He's starting to get up again. This time, though, as Joe slides back into the ring, we hear Hangman Page's music, and he sprints down to the ring. Joe bails, and as Joe is retreating up the ramp, he looks over. Back at ringside in the crowd, he can see Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana, and now his eyes get all large because he realizes that he is surrounded here in the ring and in the crowd by challengers to his throne. He is surrounded by people who are gunning for him. He's got a target on his back and his front. These two men want him, and they want that AEW world title. So Joe left. Hangman turned his attention to Swerve in the crowd. They stared at each other. Swerve smiled, and he ended up leaving. Hangman went to go help Hook to his feet. They played Hook's music. Hook lightly pushed him back. "I don't need your help." And Hook left on his own with his FTW title. And he got a nice reaction on the way out. This went a little under 10 minutes. It was very nice to have the commercial-free aspect here. It would have really killed the flow of the match if we had to do a, you know, one last picture-in-picture. So it was nice to not have to worry about any commercials here during this match. This is a great main event. This was a great main event. Joe came off like a killer. Hook got to show a ton of guts. Everything Joe threw at him, he kept coming back. He flipped him off. He kicked out at one. "Is that all you got?" Because they knew, you know, he was losing. Hook has not lost very often. He's lost one match before, which was, who was that? It was the Jack Perry, I think, right? I think that's his. That was the one blemish on his record, I think, coming into this match tonight. I think it was against Jack Perry. But they knew he was losing. So how do you protect this kid and make him look good in defeat if everything about him has been about his record? Now he's going to lose. How do you protect him? That's how. He doesn't back down. He took it to Joe from the opening bell. And he never let up. He T-boned this guy. I mean, he had the crowd in the palm of his hand. Hook has not been this over in many months, because he's definitely cooled off from when he was at the apex of his popularity there. He was like this phenom who came out of nowhere, and then he kind of came back down to earth, and he hasn't been this over in a very long time. He lost nothing from this loss to Samoa Joe tonight. He gained is what he did. And I agree with the people who made the comparisons to the Undertaker and Jeff Hardy thing from 2002. Joe didn't endorse him or anything like that when the match was over, but it was very similar. You know, in that match, Undertaker gave Jeff a lot. They really built, everybody was dying to see Undertaker lose that title, and this could be Jeff's big moment. This could be his breakout moment here, and then it wasn't. He fell short, but Undertaker, when that match was over, man, he knew that he was in a fight, and even though he was a heel, he didn't pick him up and beat him up, kick him in the balls, although I guess that's what Joe did here. He kicked him in the balls, but you know, he basically said, "All right, you earned my respect. Good job, kid." And it was a very similar thing here tonight with Hook. So Hook's going to be just fine. You know, there's a lot of promise in his future. He's still a long ways away from even being considered as far as being a world champion. I mean, he's still very new and very green, but obviously there's something there. And if they continue to take their time and build it, honestly, I think somebody like him, I made this comment about Charlie Dempsey a few weeks ago, Regal's kid. WWE worked out a deal to send Regal's kid to All Japan, and he wrestled for the Triple Crown against Nakajima, and from what I saw of the match, they had a hell of a match, and I thought, man, what a shame. What a shame that Regal's kid is in developmental right now in Orlando, because he is someone who I think would have thrived if he would have gone to Japan first. And I don't mean just like a one-off match. I mean, go over there and do tours and work over there, man. He would have thrived, and then he would have been a beast by the time he decided to come either to WWE or AEW. But he would be a good fit. I feel like someone like Hook would benefit from spending some time in Japan. I just feel like, again, he's a young guy, and so why not? Why not? It was almost like sending him on an excursion, you know, to Japan for a little while there. I feel like someone like him would really benefit. Like, just the style he works with the suplexes and everything. But, again, I love this main event. And now, it's pretty clear, we are heading for a triple threat at Revolution. Samoa Joe, Hangman Page, Swerve Strickland. I think they're going to keep the belt on Joe for a while. I hope they do. You know, Swerve's time will come. It does not have to be at Revolution. And especially because Revolution is not going to be headlined by the AEW World title, I don't believe. I believe that they're going to headline with Sting's match, whatever it is. Especially if Sting is going for the tag team titles. You're building everything around Sting. You're in Greensboro. The show has sold almost 16,000 tickets so far. We're still 6 weeks out. That doesn't happen. At least not domestically. It doesn't happen with AEW shows. 6 weeks out from a pay-per-view or an episode of Dynamite or something, they've sold 10,000, 15,000 tickets. That's Sting. That's the appeal of Sting wrestling his final match. People want to be part of it. And so if that's going to headline the show anyway, you're not going to do an AEW World title change second from the top. You may as well save it for Double or Nothing. There's no harm in giving Joe a run, a real run. Give him a run for several months, and then he can drop the belt. So I think that's your co-main event at Revolution. It'll be a three-way between those guys for the AEW World title. So I enjoyed the show tonight. Why doesn't Paige go after the UK, the Undisputed Kingdom? Because he wants the world title. He'll go after them. It would make sense for him to go after them. I think after he loses at Revolution, he'll probably end up going after Wardlow. Because he's got a bone to pick with them. Yeah, Paul, Bret Hart against the 1-2-3 Kid on Raw back in 94 is another good example. Absolutely. But I enjoyed Dynamite tonight. I thought it was a good show. It was a strong effort. I enjoyed the main event. The Mark Briscoe segment obviously was very emotional for obvious reasons. The TNT title match was very good. Timeless Tony Storm is great. Top Flight and Private Party. I enjoyed that match. Good to have those guys back. So I thought it was a very good show. Now, Rampage coming up on Friday has Chris Jericho taking on Matt Sydal. Chris Statlander takes on Queen Amanada. Penta takes on Anthony Henry. And Darby Allin wrestles Jeff Hardy, which I believe would be the first time that they have wrestled since the Owen Hart tournament, I believe. Right before... What was that? Would that have been right before Jeff got popped for his DUI? I think it was, right? So we'll have Darby and Jeff. And then on Collision on Saturday, Eddie Kingston and Ortiz take on Brian Danielson and Claudio. Buddy Matthews takes on Daniel Garcia. And Jon Moxley returns. I didn't even know he was gone. What was he gone for? 2 weeks? He was in Japan? Well, I know he's been back. He was at Battle in the Valley. So we'll get Jon Moxley back on Collision. Have you missed him? Have you missed Jon Moxley? He hasn't been gone long enough for us to miss him. And here he's making his return. 80% of you have given tonight's Dynamite a thumbs up score. 20% thumbs down. That's an excellent score. It's the best score Dynamite's gotten in a while. At Solomonster. Go ahead and vote. Again, the likes goal for tonight is 400, and we're not there yet. So if you want to be the booker, you only got a few minutes left. Get those likes in. We're 360. We don't hit 400. We don't be the booker. It's very simple. All right, let's get to your super chats. Doesn't look like we have a lot to go through here, so we might be getting out of here early. The Winston Slip says, we'll start with him. If Hook went to WWE... he would have a pirate gimmick. Well, back in the day, he would have. Probably not today, but yeah. If you went to WWE 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, he would have a hook. Bobby's World. I just want to say Deonna Purrazzo is stunning and a damn good wrestler. Fight me. Not you solo, just anyone else. Fight me. Yeah, there were a lot of people. When it comes to Deonna Purrazzo, there were a lot of people who really showed their ass and made some very stupid comments this week. Lady Fire Panda, thank you for the $20. Pigeons don't exist. Birds are government spies. And when are we getting the Solid Monster bowling video? No comment. No comment. Prince Vegeta says, Hook kicking out of one of the Muscle Busters is ridiculous. Mid-Carter's kick out of finish is too much in AEW. It didn't bother me. It does bother me in certain situations. In that situation there, it didn't bother me. I thought it worked. I do agree that just kicking out of finishers in general is overdone. It might bother some people. I'm sure it will. That did not bother. Barry says, is Eddie and Ray at WrestleMania 21 the best opening match in WrestleMania history, or is there something better? Yeah, it's called Bret Hart and Owen Hart at WrestleMania 10. It's either Bret Hart and Owen Hart at WrestleMania 10 or Triple H and Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 14. Or 14. I'm thinking 2014. WrestleMania 30 in 2014. But I still say it's Bret versus Owen. I don't think anything's topped it. Be calm, see clearly. I'm a two-time victim / survivor of gun violence. A two-time survivor. Be calm. Where do you live? How does that happen twice? Well, I'm glad you're still with us if that's the case. I don't know the circumstances. I don't know where you live, but I mean, that's like being struck by lightning twice. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad that you're with us. A shout out to Issa in the chat. Samoa Joe killed a guy. He damn near killed a guy tonight. I said, I don't think I've ever seen somebody hit the edge of the table like that, like the way that Hook did, and the table just basically gives up and says, all right, it's Samoa Joe, so we're going to collapse. And the table just collapsed on the spot. Bender McSimpson, unless the plan is to unify the AEW and Ring of Honor six-man titles, this is a waste of Jay White. Even if that is the plan, it is still a waste of Jay White. Yeah, I mean, Jay White is a champion now, but it doesn't mean anything because those belts don't mean shit. So hopefully they'll come up with something a little bit better for him. But it looks like that's going to be the story going into Revolution. They're going to stick with this Acclaimed, Bullet Club Gold stuff. Again, it looks like they're babyface or going babyface, and maybe it'll be a swerve. And then they could do a unification, and then Bullet Club Gold can win and unify the belts. Bender also says, Swerve's promo gave me Jake the Snake vibes. I don't know if I'd go that far, but Dylan Hensley, good news. Just had a meeting with Pops, our head trainer and promoter, and my debut is on the horizon, either February 3rd or February 10th. He meant 3rd. February 3rd or February 10th. Well, you let me know. I have a feeling it won't be on February 3rd. But that is very cool, though. Congrats. You'll keep us posted. Oh, I like that. Nash DTV, $4.99. I wanted to ask, as a Mets fan, how do you deal with your team letting you down every year? Like my Dallas Cowboys always let me down. Well, after a while, you would think the Cowboys fans would be used to it by now. You would think that Jerry Jones would be used to it. I don't know, man. Look, they get your hopes up sometimes. You think this year is going to be different, and then they let you down. I've always said, you know, when my time comes, and hopefully it won't be for a very long time, but when my time comes, I want the New York Mets to lower my casket into the ground so they could let me down one more time. I think it's something the Mets fans and the Cowboys fans have in common. Groovy Goose, to think the last time someone in a Mets jersey won a championship was Vince Russo in WCW. Thanks for the streams, bro. Was he wearing a Mets jersey? Isn't he a Yankees fan? I thought Russo was a Yankees. Are you sure he wasn't wearing a Yankees jersey? I know Russo is a Yankee fan. I don't think he would be wearing a Mets uniform. M. Mills, again, thank you for the $28. Vic Joseph. Boots, has it been determined who is in the championship committee that Joe mentioned, or is Samoa Joe the championship committee? They have not mentioned. The original man from Atlanta, 2024. The Joe Hook match reminds me of The Undertaker selling for Jeff Hardy. Yep. I heard a lot of that tonight. Omar, Hook against Joe gave me Jeff Hardy against Undertaker vibes. Yep. Yep. Rumpelmane, don't even do it. Don't even do it. Retro KOH, what is your favorite Survivor Series tag match? I am split between Team Austin against Team Bischoff or Raw versus SmackDown from 05. Team Austin against Team Bischoff in 03 is tough to beat. I mean, that was not only was it the last great Survivor Series elimination match, it may well be the great Survivor Series elimination match. I mean, I had some favorites. You know, the one where The Undertaker debuted in 1990 that came down to Bret and DiBiase was always a favorite of mine. I always liked it. I always had a soft spot for it. Yeah, you know what? It may well be. It may well be the one from 03. I'm struggling to come up with one that I think would be better. And Egghead Show. Joe putting Hook on the table made me wince. Or in the table. Yeah, I was going to say. He kind of put him in the table. More than he put him on the table. Vince Russo is a San Francisco Giants fan. Yeah, that sounds about right. Guy from New York is a San Francisco Giants fan. That sounds about right. Omar says Russo wore a Yankees helmet and a Giants top. Okay, so yeah, I mean, he wasn't wearing... He wouldn't be wearing Mets stuff no matter what. Now you just reminded me that Vince Russo won the WCW World title and now I'm pissed off all over again. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Former WCW world champion Vince Russo. Need I say more? Need I say more? Boney with the $2. Better return, 2010 Brett or 2018 Shawn? 20, Brett. I'm including Brett's entire return from the moment he came back on Raw. Not just the awful WrestleMania match with Vince McMahon. I still say Brett. All right, tag team, be the booker. Here we go. We begin with Los Matadores with El Torito. There he is. Look at the tail. He's got the tail hanging down. He's got the horns. Look at this. The person before who wrote in and said that if Hook had gone to WWE, he would have had like a pirate gimmick. Yeah. I give you Exhibit A. It would have been right around the same time as this shit right here. El Torito and Los Matadores are going to be taking on FTR. If it was almost anybody else, I think I would have given that the buzzer. FTR, though, against the Matadors would have been actually a very good match. And then they could have lifted the bull up in the air and given him the shatter machine, so that probably would have made the whole thing worth it. All right, women's be the booker. We have Victoria. Victoria's not in the Hall of Fame, is she? I don't believe so. I don't believe Victoria is in the Hall of Fame yet. All right, we have former women's champion in both WWE and AEW, or not AEW, TNA. Victoria taking on Shayna Baszler. Shayna Baszler. Give me the killer Shayna Baszler from that NXT title run against Prime Victoria. I'll take that match. I'll take that. And men's be the booker. It's main event time. Commercial free. You got a commercial free main event here. Men's be the booker begins with, oh my God, he showed up for work. Is Issa still here? She might explode. Roman Reigns, the undisputed WWE Universal Heavyweight Champion, has actually showed up for work here in Be the Booker. I feel so blessed. Who will he step into the ring to defend his title against? I don't know. Let's find out if I can get this thing to work. The wheel didn't want to spin. Another drum roll. Let's pretend that didn't happen. Roman Reigns, one-on-one with Pac. Oh, Roman Reigns and Pac for the undisputed championship. Pac-Man, that war... Pac-Man, I bought myself. Oh, I popped myself. I love it. I love it. I was going to say, Pac, though, you know, he had that great WWE title match on Raw with Seth Rollins back in 2015. And I'm sure that he and Roman Reigns could put on a banger. And by the way, if you're wondering where Pac is, he has been spotted recently behind the scenes. So he is on his way back very soon. He's obviously stateside. So we should be seeing him, of course. Issa says that Pac is going to get smashed. Issa, do you wish that you would get smashed by Roman Reigns? I bet you do, right? Well, I like that main event, and that, my friends, is what you call a clean sweep. A clean sweep. We have gone 3 for 3 and Be the Booker. That is how you do it. We got a super chat coming in here from SB the Bully. Was there a mention of Taz and Joe's TNA history during the buildup of Joe and Hook? Would that be an interesting twist should they revisit the feud? I don't recall them mentioning it, and it would be interesting. I mean, I would have mentioned it. Maybe they did, and I just, you know, again, didn't hear it. I don't think that they mentioned it, and it's clear that Taz is not going to get physical in any way, like even in the slightest way. He's not going to get physical. He's not going to take a bump. You know, otherwise they could have easily worked a spot into the main event tonight, even post-match, where maybe he put his hands on Taz and, you know, for what he did to his kid. They didn't do that. I would have mentioned it, but again, I don't recall them saying anything about it. Taz mentioned that he used to manage Joe. So he did. Okay, so apparently Taz mentioned it, just kind of threw it out there on commentary, not so much in the build-up. So, but they did mention it before the match tonight, I'm being told. So there you go. The Bastard and the Tribal Chief. WrestleMania main event indeed. Well, we are still waiting for an update on the condition of Seth Rollins, and I kind of feel like the silence is not a good thing. They put an update out, and this was a little bit different because they had a match stoppage on the show, so they wanted to let people know when Austin Theory and Carmelo Hayes last week had their little, you know, botched finish there where they bopped heads and they canceled the match. They updated people on social media that they were okay. Here, it was never acknowledged that Rollins may have injured his knee on Monday night, but he did. And supposedly he went to go get an MRI. That was on Monday. He would have maybe had the MRI yesterday. We haven't heard anything yet. So the silence can mean nothing, or the silence can mean something bad. We don't know. But that is going to be a big story to follow, because if, in fact, Seth Rollins is injured, how badly is he injured? Is it a minor thing where he has to miss the Rumble and maybe even the Chamber, but he'll be okay for WrestleMania, or is it worse? You know, they've been plagued by knee injuries. They have been plagued by ACL injuries lately. Cora Jade just went down to an ACL injury. She's going to be gone for a year. Charlotte Flair is already in rehab. She had a torn ACL. She's gone until at least October. There was somebody else. NXT. Nikita Lyons just came back from a torn ACL, I think. Sol Ruka is still out with a torn ACL. So you hope it's nothing that serious on that level, because that would shake up the WrestleMania card if Seth Rollins is going to be out. So hopefully that's not the case. Once we know more, though, we will talk about it. But I don't know. Every day that goes by that we don't get an update to me, I get very worried. Rumplemane says, Bukkake Wednesdays. That's from the Bukkake Ghost, which is in the Super Chats. Thanks to our friend Abu Sika, wherever Abu Sika is. Shout out to him. Yeah, so Sonya Deville's another one. Yeah, Sonya Deville, she's been spotted at the PC rehabbing. She also is coming back from a torn ACL. So, unfortunately, the knee injuries, they do not discriminate between men and women. I just feel like we've been hearing about ACLs a lot lately, and I certainly hope that's not the case. Friday night. Come on back, because I'm going to be live with you after SmackDown. We are having a contract signing. I know Issa is excited. Roman Reigns is going to be back on the show Friday night. We're going to have Roman, Randy, AJ Styles, LA Knight signing the contract. Did we already have a contract signing with Roman Reigns and LA Knight in the lead up to Crown Jewel, right? Remember when LA Knight took the seat at the head of the table for the contract signing? We're getting a second contract signing between LA Knight and Roman Reigns. And then episode 844 of the podcast on Sunday. And then next week, I'll keep you guys posted on what's going on, because I'll be in Tampa, St. Pete. I will be at the Royal Rumble. And going live for my review either very late that night or the next day. I don't know which yet, but it's going to be a lot going on. It's going to be very busy. Very busy weekend next weekend. All right. Thank you guys very much. I'm going to leave you. Be well. Stay safe. Thank you guys so much for all the support. Come on back Friday night. We'll do it all over again for SmackDown. Until then, take care, guys.